devotees here. Your brothers, right? Your brothers? Do you know who Dhruva Maharaj is? You do. Younger brother knows and the older brother doesn't know. Do you know who Dhruva Maharaj's younger brother's name? He has a younger brother.
No, Uttama.
Uttama. Okay, we're going to do a little getting organized here. Like the background of our discussion is now being hung. The background is, with the white beard and a big pile of hair there, that's Maitreya Muni, great sage, and much younger looking fellow there that's supposed to be Vidura. Vidura was on pilgrimage. Vidura was actually much older than the picture shows. He was of the three brothers, the elder brother Dhritarashtra, middle brother Pandu, and the younger brother Vidura. Dhritarashtra, Pandu, and Vidura from Mahabharata. Vidura was on pilgrimage, and when he was in the course of his pilgrimage, many things happened, but he ended up having a conversation with Maitreya. He placed many questions before Maitreya, and one of the topics that he asked Maitreya was to explain how Lord Vishnu made the creation happen. So in response to that, the steps of the creation of the Vishnu forms and so many things, the universe comes into being. Brahma is born from the body of Garbhadaksha Vishnu. And then after the universe is built, the universe is filled up. And the first, one of the main persons coming directly from Lord Brahma is the first Manu. The first Manu, his name is, starts with an S. Swayambhuva Manu. Right. Swayambhuva Manu. Swayambhuva Manu? Swayambhuva Manu. And Swayambhuva Manu had two sons and three daughters, and one of those sons was Dhruva's father. The elder son, Priyavrata. And the younger son, Uttanapada. Uttanapada became the ruler of the whole earth planet. And Dhruva was due to become the firstborn son, was going to become the heir to the throne. He was going to rule the world. Something unfortunate happened. The Uttanapada had a second queen who was very envious of Dhruva. She wanted her son. And her son again's name was Uttama, right? Uttama? Uttama? Uttama. Uttama, good. So she wanted Uttama to become the king. So she insulted 5-year-old Dhruva so badly. And the father, the king, said nothing. So Dhruva left the palace, went to his mother, crying. Long story short, he wanted a kingdom. He was going to show his stepmother, not only I'll sit on my father's throne, of a kingdom better than my father, and better than my father's father, and better than my father's father's father. That means his grandfather is Lord Brahma. What's a kingdom? Question. What's a kingdom that's better than Brahma, the topmost planet in the universe? It's a spiritual planet. And Dhruva got it. So his mother said, she didn't say, oh, stop this silly child's idea. She said, to get anything that you want, you know, such a thing that you want, only the personality Godhead can fulfill that. So off he went to the forest, to find Vishnu, but he couldn't find Vishnu. Narada found him, and Narada gave him the bhakti process. He followed it very carefully within 6 months. So he's 5 years old, 6 months, and he becomes a perfected being. Whew. And Vishnu comes before him. And Dhruva offers prayers, beautiful prayers. And then what we heard this afternoon, Vishnu responded to his prayers. Vishnu said, you please me very much. I know that you don't have any material desires anymore, but you did desire two things. You desired a kingdom, and so it's waiting for you. You're going to go back to your father's kingdom, where you will rule for 36,000 years, because this is Satya Yuga, life duration was longer. And after the ruling for that long, then you'll come to the next place where you'll reside, and that's my planet. Vishnu has a planet in this universe. It's called Sweta Dweep. Sweta means white. Dweepa means island. Sweta Dweep. It's a spiritual planet within this universe. There's no one ruling there just now, but when you go there, you can rule. And that place exists even after the universe is finished. You'll still have a place. And I know that you had some animosity towards your stepmother for insulting you. But you can know that she's going to die in a fire. What's going to happen is one day while you're ruling, your brother's going to go to the forest hunting. He'll be killed. Your mother's stepmother's going to go mad out of attachment for Uttama. And she'll go running into the forest and she'll die in a forest fire. So that's what's going to happen to your stepmother. And I'm going to go back to the spiritual world now. So you can go back home, back to the palace. And your father is waiting for you. And after some time, he'll follow your example. He'll also strive to achieve spiritual perfection. So Vishnu leaves. And after Vishnu leaves, Dhruva goes through a whole series of moving from resentment to responsibility. He resented in the beginning the ill treatment given by his stepmother. So there's a series of steps that he shows in his prayers. He's feeling very, very much sad that he had this big time material desire from the Supreme Lord who can give perfection, liberation, ending the cycle of birth and death, and he wanted something stupid, a material kingdom, temporary. But the Lord is so kind that he's feeling very grateful. He's so kind, he took away those desires. Although I didn't ask him to take away those desires, he took away those desires. And instead he gave me residence in a spiritual planet, in his own abode. How kind. So he has these two emotions. He's very sad, and he's very grateful. So he just follows Vishnu's instructions, go back to the palace. So that's where we are. We see we're going to cover these verses. And the conversation is, again, between the one that's narrating this history is the one on our right. That's Maitreya Muni, and he's speaking to Vidura. Maitreya said, my dear Vidura, persons like you who are pure devotees of the lotus feet of Mukunda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead who can offer liberation, and you who are always attached to the honey of his lotus feet, are always satisfied in serving at the lotus feet of the Lord in any condition of life. Such persons, like you, remain satisfied, and thus They never ask the Lord for material prosperity. Now, Dhruva was asking for material prosperity. So he went, at the beginning, he wasn't a pure devotee. So he went all the way from Sakama to Nishkam Bhakti, having desires to having no desires. Here's a nice painting of Madhavendra Puri and Krishna. Do you recognize Madhavendra Puri? He's carrying his danda there over one shoulder and holding his bead bag in the other in his hand. He's in Vrindavan, and Krishna is bringing him a pot of milk, because Madhavendra Puri had a type of sannyas where he wouldn't ask people for anything. If people brought something to him, he would accept it. And if people didn't bring something to him, he wouldn't go door to door or anything. Madhukari is called. Madhukari. He didn't do that. He just, so Krishna brought. Oh, Vidura. This is now paraphrasing from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Those like you who taste the dust from the lotus feet of Mukunda do not desire anything for themselves except service to him. Their minds are completely satisfied with whatever object comes to them by chance, like Madhavendra Puri. So this is now expanding on this term Nishkam, from Sakam to Nishkam. With desire, having no desire. Nishkam. Prabhupada writes, one should not mistakenly think that Nishkam means giving up all desires. That is impossible. A living entity is eternally existent, and he cannot give up desires. A living entity must have desires. That is a symptom of life. When there is a recommendation to become desireless, it is to be understood that this means that we should not desire anything for our sense gratification. So desire in relation to Krishna, for service to Krishna. For a devotee, this state of mind, nishpraha, unattached, is the right position. In spriha, we find that term in Bhagavad Gita, it means aspiration. Chapter 4, Bhagavad Gita, spriha. So nishpraha is unattached. We find a similar idea in Ishopanishad. You know the verse? Isabhasyamidam sarvam jatkincha jagatyan jagat tena tyaktena bundita magridaha kasyasvidhanam. It's an important verse. The whole of Ishopanishad. Isha means the controller, and Panishad means to come close to. Upanishad, become situated close to Isha. One becomes situated close to Isha by recognizing he is the proprietor of everything. And we, in that verse, were advised, tena, tyaktena, we're satisfied with whatever comforts are offered by the Lord. Nishkam. You have to maintain your body, so you accept things, but not more than what's required. What's required? And instead, one is attached to the lotus feet. Attachment to the honeycomb of Krishna's lotus feet is the only way to become nishkam. You become attached to a greater happiness. The lesser happiness is easy to let go of. Easy to let go of. Detachment from tar-like sticky matter. So that was the first verse. Now, when King Uttanapada heard that his son Dhruva was coming back home, as if coming back to life after death, he could not put his faith in this message. He heard it, for he was doubtful of how this could happen. He considered himself the most wretched, and therefore he thought that it was not possible for him to attain such good fortune. commentary says the king could not believe that a small boy of such a tender age, 5 years old, no lunchbox, could live in the forest. He was certain that Dhruva was dead. Next verse. Although he could not believe the words of the messenger, he had full faith in the words of the great sage Narada. Thus, he was greatly overwhelmed by the news, and he immediately offered the messenger a highly valuable necklace in great satisfaction. Lucky messenger, there goes the necklace he's handing him. And this is Vedic custom or culture. Someone brings good news like this, a gift is given. In Ramayana, Ram says, I don't have anything to give. What to do? So Sita gives something, because she had some ornaments. Next two verses, the king, then King Uttanapada, being very eager to see the face of his lost son, mounted a chariot drawn by excellent horses and bedecked with golden filigree, taking with him many learned brahmanas, all the elderly personalities of his family, his officers, his ministers, and his immediate friends. He immediately left the city. As he proceeded in this parade, there were auspicious sounds of conch shells, kettle drums, flutes, and the chanting of Vedic mantras to indicate all good fortune. Now, this next painting doesn't show a golden chariot with horses. It shows an elephant, but that's okay. And seated on the top, you see two boys. There's father, Uttanapada, underneath that canopy. And there's a little bit older boy, that's Dhruva. A little bit younger boy, that's... What's his name? Uttam, very good. Now in the back, behind the elephant, you see a palanquin. And there's two ladies in the palanquin. Those are the two queens. And their names are Suruchi and Suniti. Suniti is the older one, that's Dhruva's mother, Suniti. Both of the queens of King Uttanapada, namely Suniti and Suruchi, along with his other son Uttama, appeared in the procession. The queens were seated on the palanquin. And from the purport of this verse, Suniti, that's Dhruva's mother, out of her great compassion and due to being the mother of a great Vaishnav, did not hesitate to take the other wife, Suruchi, and her son, Uttama, on the palanquin. Now, the painting we saw is a little different than the text, but that's okay. I mean, look at this. This horse this fellow is riding is about as big as the lady that's in the palanquin. That's a little disproportionate, but that's okay. The main point is, the insulting queen, that's Suruchi, the one that insulted Dhruva and caused her son Dhruva to leave and be gone for 6 months in the forest, she didn't hold a grudge. Now, what mother is not going to hold a grudge? She insulted my son and he left home and he went to the forest. She's going to have bad feelings. But just see how exalted is Suniti. She didn't have that. In fact, she rode in the same palanquin as did her son, Uttam. What's that quality of a Vaishnava upon which all other desirable qualities rest or are supported? What's that one quality? Krishna? Krishna. Krishna Ekasharana. It's the language of Rupa Goswami. Shelter. complete dedication to Krishna. That's his mother. She was that before, she's that in the middle, she's that at the end. She went back to Godhead just because of that quality, one quality. And so she has all the other good qualities. And what are some of Suniti's good qualities? Well, she was very forgiving. She had all faith. We discussed this in the very beginning. What mother can say, sure, 5-year-old boy, go to the forest, no problem. No, that's against motherhood. Mothers can't do that. She did it. And how was that possible? She had all faith in Vishnu. She was offering prayers to Vishnu, please protect my son. And Vishnu protected her son. She had full faith. She was like a Paramahansa. She was a swan-like person. Even this offending co-queen said nasty, nasty things. She took the good part from the bad part. She said to Dhruva, take shelter of the personality of God. What she said is right. She's a very special person. She's a very special person. Okay, we're going to go on. Two more verses. Upon seeing Dhruva Maharaj approaching the neighboring small forest, King Uttanapada, with great haste, got down from his chariot. He had been very anxious for a long time to see his son Dhruva, and therefore with great love and affection he went forward to embrace his long-lost boy. Breathing very heavily, the king embraced him with both arms. But Dhruva Maharaj was not the same as before. He was completely sanctified by spiritual advancement, due to having been touched by the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Well, we know that he was touched by his conch. But here it's also said somehow he was touched by his feet. Maybe when he paid his obeisances at his feet, he was touched by his feet. So there's the king, there's the two boys, and there's the two queens. And there's another kind of a cartoon drawing where Dhruva is reaching out to his mother. Reunion with Dhruva Maharaj filled King Uttanapada's long-cherished desire, and for this reason he smelled Dhruva's head again and again and bathed him with torrents of very cold tears. Prabhupada explains cold tears, hot tears. By nature's way, when a man cries, ladies too, there may be two causes. When one cries in great happiness upon the fulfillment of some desire, the tears coming forth from the eyes are very cold and pleasing, whereas tears in times of distress are very hot. Now somehow people that know the science of crying know that's hot and cold tears. Then Dhruva Maharaj, the foremost of all nobles, first of all offered his obeisances at the feet of his father. Now he was before, he was angry at his father. He just neglected him. When he was insulted, it was purposely done loud enough that the king would hear, and he said nothing. Dhruva was really hurt by his father's silence. But here he is offering obeisances at the feet of his father and was honored by his father with various questions. He then bowed his head at the feet of his two mothers, including the insulting one. So he has gone past resentment. He just let go of resentment. And that's the theme of this little section, moving from resentment. After achieving perfection by self-realization and seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face, Dhruva Maharaj was completely freed from all contamination of material desire. Feelings of insult or honor in this material world are never perceived by a devotee. Now, when he was little, that was what he was feeling. In fact, Narada commented, wow, just a little boy, some words. And his whole demeanor is totally fixed in anger. So there's an important lesson, how to go beyond this duality of insult or honor. Duality due to animosity is a creation of the material world. There's no such thing in the spiritual world, which is absolute reality. Interesting graphic, huh? Love on one side and hate on the other. Or he spoke earlier about love towards some people, hate towards some other people, friends and enemies. Friends and enemies. It's the same topic that's spoken about by Prahlad to his teachers, Sanda and Amarka. This is not, I've heard about this from my teacher, from Narada, and now I'm seeing it. You too, friends, enemies, people. That's material. And if you want to go beyond material, you have to give up that friends, enemies thing. Now, Dhruva held no feelings of animosity towards anyone. Prabhupada writes, feelings of insult or honor in this material world are due to material desire, which arises from forgetfulness of who we really are, thus a material conception of self. This is the painting we saw on the very first day. That's Suruchi. I call her Sunasti. And look at her body language. She's insulting little Dhruva, little boy, who's feeling the insult right into his heart. His heart was broken. He says to Narada, like a pot, a clay pot that's broken, it doesn't hold water. So my heart is broken by the harsh words of Suniti, Suruchi. So when you're in material consciousness, you can feel those things. And when you're in spiritual consciousness, you don't feel those things. That's the conception of self beyond matter. And his mother said the same thing. My dear boy, long may you live. So this is now, unto one who has transcendental qualities due to friendly behavior with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all living entities offer honor just as water automatically flows down by nature. So even his father, his stepmother, his brother, they're all honoring him. And they were honoring him because he had completely taken shelter of the personality of Godhead. And the Bhagavatam is teaching us that happens just like water flows down. You don't have to, train up water to say, okay, it's time to flow down. Water flows down. That's the verse. Just as water flows naturally to a lower level, all living beings naturally offer respect to that person with whom the Lord is pleased because of his qualities and friendliness. Because of his qualities and friendliness. Now, remember back when we asked that question, what's that one quality that allows one to be very, very tolerant even in most provoking circumstances and all other good qualities come? Krishna Eka Sharana. Yeah, fully surrendered. So when that happened, that's not where Dhruva started, but his mother advised him, Narada advised him, he followed their advice, he took full shelter of the personality of Godhead, and thus all of the good qualities became his qualities. And because all of those good qualities became his qualities, he was very pleasing to everyone. And they were offering honor and respect to him, just like water flows down. Naturally, water flows down. Here's a painting of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. You're all familiar with six Goswamis of Vrindavan, right? They're associates of Lord Chaitanya. Behind them, you can see there's Govardhan Hill. They're living in Vrindavan. And there's a song, Sad Goswami, means six Goswamis. Sad Goswami Ashtakam. There's eight prayers. And in one of those prayers says, Dira Dira Jana Priyo. To both the Diras and the Adiras. The devotees and the non-devotees, or demons. They're the gentle and the disturbed. They were equal, and even the Adira persons, they had regard. Priya. They held the Goswamis very dear because they were friendly to everyone. And they were not anxious to have anything that anyone else had. They were satisfied within themselves. So the stepmother, the nasty one, Tsuruchi, was previously inimical. Now, Dhruva was respected by her because of his worship of the Lord. And this topic is expanded further in Rupa Goswami's writings. This Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, you see a cover of this translation. It's the summary study is Nectar Devotion, but it's drawn from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami. He expands this all-fascinating and all-auspicious characteristic of a true devotee such as Dhruva. But Rupa Goswami extends this to the all-attractiveness of bhakti itself. So Dhruva became attractive because of his bhakti, and bhakti is all-attractive. The two brothers, Uttama and Dhruva Maharaj, also exchanged their tears. They were overwhelmed by the ecstasy of love and affection. And when they embraced one another, the hair on their bodies stood up. Then comes his mother. Suniti, the real mother of Dhruva Maharaj, embraced the tender body of her son, who was dearer to her than her own life, and thus forgot all material grief, for she was very pleased. That's Suniti. She's a special personality. In the purport, Prabhupada writes, it is also significant in this verse that Suniti, mother of Dhruva Maharaj, is described as Vira Su, a mother who produced a great hero. Vira is hero. A mother is also a great hero. Excuse me, a devotee is also a great hero because he conquers the influence of Maya. So she was a hero because she had a son who was a hero. So may you two boys become heroes so your mother becomes a hero. And you can become a hero by conquering Maya. And you conquer Maya by becoming pure devotees. That's your mission. Life's mission, assignment. Become a hero. Mame vie prapadyante mayami tam tarantite. It's a nice painting, isn't it? There's Dhruva. And a four-armed form of Vishnu with a really big club. And his conch shell touching his head. A lotus flower in one hand and his disc in the other. So now we're going to conclude the chapter this way. The citizens are now going to receive Dhruva Maharaj. First it was the father, the king, and the two queens and so forth, and the ministers. Now the citizens glorify Suniti as she welcomes Dhruva. The residents of the palace praise the queen Dear Queen, your beloved son was lost a long time ago, and it is your great fortune that he has now come back. It appears, therefore, that your son will be able to protect you for a very long time and will put an end to all your material pangs. Dear Queen, you must have worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she did, who worships his devotees. Krishna worships his devotees. Excuse me, delivers his devotees from the greatest danger. Persons who constantly meditate upon him surpass the course of birth and death. This perfection is very difficult to achieve. That's the citizens praising his mother. Dhruva Maharaj, this purport. Dhruva Maharaj was the lost child of Queen Suniti, but during his absence, check this out, she always meditated upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and she prayed for his protection, who was able to rescue his devotee from all dangers. This is one of the teachings of surrender, Krishna Ekasharana, right? Surrender to Krishna alone. So one of the limbs of, or angas of surrender is this one. Avishya Rakshibe Krishna Vishvasa Palana. Having faith that Krishna is one's palana. He's the protector. Nice. So now we're going back to arriving in the palace, arriving in the capital city. My dear Vidura, when everyone was thus praising Dhruva Maharaj, the king was very happy, and he had Dhruva and his brother seated on the back of a she-elephant. That's the one we saw before. Thus, he returned to his capital, where he was praised by all classes of men. So here's the festivity, the cultural part. The whole city was decorated with columns of banana trees containing bunches of fruits and flowers, and betel nut trees with leaves and branches were seen here and there. There were also many gates set up, which were structured to give the appearance of sharks. Gates giving the appearance of sharks. I guess that's auspicious, huh? At each and every gate, there were burning lamps and big water pots decorated with differently colored cloth, strings of pearls, flower garlands, and hanging mango leaves. These are standard paraphernalia for festivals. In the capital city, there were many palaces, city gates, and surrounding walls, which were already very, very beautiful. And on this occasion, all of them were decorated with golden ornaments. The domes of the city palaces glittered, as did the domes of the beautiful airplanes. Check it out, they had airplanes, which hovered over the city. They weren't 747s. Different kind of airplane. Thus, as Dhruva Maharaj passed on the road from every place in the neighborhood, all the gentle household ladies assembled to see him, and out of material affection they offered their blessings, showering him with white mustard seed, barley, yogurt, water, newly grown grass, fruits, and flowers. Sounds a little messy. Throwing yogurt at him. Anyway. In this way, Dhruva Maharaj, while hearing the pleasing songs sung by the ladies, entered the palace of his father. Dhruva Maharaj thereafter lived in his father's palace, which had walls bedecked with highly valuable jewels. His affectionate father took particular care of him And he dwelled in that house just as the demigods live in their palaces in the higher planetary systems. So he went from austerity to opulence. But he's not getting, you know, puffed up or enamored by the opulence. We heard that already. Dhruva Maharaj then lived in a royal palace which was full of heavenly pleasures. Here's the description. Soft, silky beds, jeweled bedsteads, jeweled furniture, marble and jeweled palace walls, emerald staircases, heavenly gardens and lakes, sweet singing birds and bumblebees. Whew, sounds like a heavenly planet. But Dhruva Maharaj was saintly. If the head of the government is saintly, certainly the citizens become saintly, and they are very happy because both their spiritual and physical needs and hankerings are satisfied. So that's a description of his palace life. He's not the king yet. His father's still around. And when he became of age, he was placed on the throne. The saintly King Uttanapada, hearing of the glorious deeds of Dhruva Maharaj and personally seeing also how influential and great he was, felt very satisfied. For Dhruva's activities were wonderful to the supreme degree. So now he's going to turn over the throne. When, after concentrating, King Uttanapada saw that Dhruva Maharaj was suitably mature to take charge of the kingdom, and that his ministers were agreeable, and the citizens were also very fond of him, he enthroned Dhruva as emperor of this planet. The whole planet. And we're almost done. Then the king's going to go to the forest. After considering his advanced age and deliberating on the welfare of his spiritual self, King Uttanapada detached himself from worldly affairs and entered the forest. So now here's a little summary of what we've covered so far. Chapters 8 and 9. This is the summary page right now. Dhruva Maharaj, upon leaving home, felt anger upon insult, resentment upon contemplating on the insult. Resentment turned into revenge to prove himself. But then the good news is, he had the association of Narada Muni and then in turn Lord Vishnu, and he moved from that lower position to this one. And the characteristics of this one is, by the time he returned home, all resentment was gone, completely finished. He had respect awakened towards even Suruchi and everybody else. He had detachment. Even though he had, you know, surrounding him was all kind of opulence, and he accepted responsibility, the kingdom. So now comes the magical question for each one of us. Are we ready to let go of our resentment? And there's only one way. You have to become attached to the personality of Godhead. You can't just let go. You have to go somewhere. You have to be attached to something. Are you going to let go of the resentment attachment and take the attachment to the personality of Godhead? That's the picture. The whole story of Dhruva is moving from sakam bhakti to nishkam bhakti. From desires, that's our present position, some bhakti, but desires. And get to, there's only one desire left. That's the personality of Godhead. That's a nice path. And it's a path that we can move on. And Dhruva's kind of like a role model to teach us. And we can't do the austerities and all the things that he did. It's not physically possible. But the principle certainly is. And we're being encouraged through the words of the Bhagavatam and Dhruva's nice example and Narada's kind assistance and his fantastic supramam to get to that place. It's possible. It's meant for us. And Prabhupada wanted the whole world to receive Srimad Bhagavatam. He said many times, every household should have Srimad Bhagavatam. And there are statements in the Puranas that say a household that doesn't. Well, it doesn't say nice things about a household that doesn't. But when you have one in your household, you don't just leave it on the shelf. And even if you leave it on the shelf, it's auspicious, spiritually beneficial for the whole family. But if you read it on a regular basis, then that auspiciousness kind of spreads. And I see you have Canto 1 over here. You're reading Canto? Oh, you're reading Canto 1. You've already?
Yeah,
you have a reading group.
Yeah,
reading group. Oh, good. Oh, good. How auspicious.
We finished the third canto.
It's how it works. I mean, before Prabhupada came to, you know, fulfill the instruction of his spiritual master, there are a lot of people in this world that didn't know anything about anything. They probably thought they knew a lot about a lot of things, but they really didn't know anything about anything, and I'm one of them. And, you know, taking the inspiration that came from Prabhupada, it's now spreading, and then it's spreading, and then it's spreading. It's like a virus.
This virus is better than this one.
Yes. 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 We don't take vaccines for this virus. We get more and more and more. It becomes, I mean, what we're hearing in the morning class is, you know, the intoxicating state. Oh no, it's Dhruva. He wanted the association of devotees. He's already, this is a prayer to Vishnu. This is what we heard today. Through the association of his mother and then Narada, he's at this place where he has no more material desire. But he's greedy. He wants more association of such devotees. Because those devotees, they become intoxicated by the topics of Krishna. They just like get giddy and enjoy discussing the topics of Krishna. And he just wants to swim in that ocean of nectar or honey, that madhu. The word is used. Madhu amrita. Yeah. Topics of Krishna. Okay, so that's where starting now, I guess it's going to be tomorrow, we're going to start a new chapter. Yeah? We're going to start a new chapter, 10. That's it, tomorrow. Fight, flight, focus. That's tomorrow. It's interesting. This is now, he becomes the king. His father has gone to the forest to achieve perfection. He's now, you know, a mature person, the king, ruling as a pure devotee. Okay, let's see if there's some discussion. We have our sanitizing protocol. We wipe the microphone after each person.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. Please accept my humble obeisances.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna,
Shri Prabhupada. I just have been following your Dhruva's prayers and story, and I just think it's very, I guess it resonates with me in a way that, you know, how tolerate, like, I'm trying to acquire the quality of how to be more tolerable. So,
tolerant.
Tolerant, right.
Tolerable is people towards you. Tolerant is you towards other people.
Sorry, yes, yes. But I can be more tolerant. So sometimes, you know, how do I know in a way that, you know, how Dhruva Maharaj accepted the guidance that he was given from his mother and,
Narada.
Narada Muni. So how do I know, like, sometimes in those kinds of emotions, you know, I can hear things, but I can't listen to it, or and vice versa.
It doesn't go inside.
Right. So, and after a while, it can, like, make some kind of impact. So how can I understand who is that person when someone's giving me that advice, that it is, like, Narad Muni or you know, Stunuti or
Stunuti? Well, when you become, it's like saturation. It's like a gulab jamun. Have you made gulab jamuns? Not. It's like a cheese ball, and you put the cheese ball in sugar juice, and it just. So your question is, how do I know when the gulab jamun has? You just squeeze it. So you just, you know, you take that cheese ball and let it sit in the juice, and it's going to get juicy. So that's, you know, the how-to is just you follow the process. These sound vibrations have potency. That's the juice. And you're the cheese ball. And just sit in that juice. You know, you engage yourself. So now, once you're familiar with what that sound vibration is, you'll be able to recognize, is this that same sound vibration? Now, there's variegatedness. We're all persons. Thank God. We're all individuals. Just like your two boys. They're very, very different personalities. Very different personalities. Not just different age, different personalities. So we're all different persons. But that sound vibration, it strikes the heart. And when you become familiar with what that sound vibration is, as you become familiar, it has a potency. The sound vibration alone has a potency. And it's heart transforming. It cleanses the unwanted and awakens the wanted. And as that cleansing and awakened state of consciousness matures, you'll be able to discriminate this from that. The Dhammi Bodhi Yogam Tam. And to whom? Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam. Then you'll know. Just stay immersed in the juice.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay.
Another question also. So, you know, sometimes it doesn't have to be a devotee. So I know Narad Muni and, you know, Suniti were great souls and, you know, right. But sometimes, you know, Krishna arranges even like other people who are maybe not devotees. But if you see the, like, how can we accept their instructions in a way that it's purifying to us? Because I think, you know, I've heard that people who you don't really get along with or something are the holding the keys to your, you know, going to Vaikuntha, because this, therefore, they're like purifying your heart in a way.
Yeah.
Because your false ego or.
Yeah, they're instruments of purification, but it's not the same. It's okay. It's more than okay. It's something that you, than I, and as the Madhyama Adhikaris were enjoined to do. There's the Supreme Lord we worship. There's devotees we make friends. There's innocent people we extend kindness. And the ruffians and atheists we keep distance from. And then amongst the devotees, there are those that are more advanced, those that are peers, so we have to have our discriminating compass on, turned in the on position. We need to know, you know, by what criterion do you decide this, that, the other? The intelligence is part of your responsibility, and the intelligence is given from Krishna under the guidance of scripture. It's quite okay. You differentiate between people that are devotees and people that aren't devotees. And you take confidential kind of instruction from those who are advanced devotees and share with peers and etc. So we make distinctions, but we can appreciate that non-devotees may be good people, but we don't take any confidential instruction from them. You know, we respect them. In their heart of hearts, they're also Krishna devotees. They just haven't had that same facility of giving, you know, sitting in the gulab jamun juice, of hearing the topics of Krishna like you have. So you, according to the relationship and the person, you can share topics of Krishna.
What if they don't want to listen to those topics?
Then you don't give those topics. You just smile and you pray from within your heart.
This is another question.
Tomorrow, this is just a little sharing. Hold off. Tomorrow, we're going to have a home visit, and one of the parents' sons has a friend in school, and the friend in school is an American kid, and his mom is coming tomorrow. And she doesn't know nothing about nothing. So I'm not going to, you know, give a Dhruva Maharaj story to her. It's going to be really simple. And I, you know, I have given some thought to, but you know, how from the tradition that she grew up in, how there's similarity between her tradition and this tradition. She can do a little handshake with that tradition. I'm not going to say too much, but just help her to feel, hey, I can recognize this and I can recognize that. And this, you know, sounds like there's some wisdom here. If she can meet with that impression, that's good. So how you express yourself to other people depends upon the relationship and where they are in their trajectory of spirituality, so on. So you customize it, but you know, in your heart of hearts, you're Krishna's representative, trying to be his instrument, nimitta, his instrument. He has a mission. He wants to give love. So you're an instrument of that. That's nice. And how do you do it? It depends on the intelligence Krishna gives you.
Beautiful. Thank you. I do have one more question.
Okay.
I was going to ask in the morning. So how do we stop ourselves from keep going back to our typical nature? So I keep finding myself, explaining myself, you know, myself in clarification of every time. And I feel like, you know, because I'm trying to clarify, things are just going in. I know I'm supposed to use my tongue in, you know, glorifying Krishna, right? But a lot of times I find myself clarifying what I mean to someone, versus, cause it's always, I guess, coming out wrong.
Welcome to the club.
So then, you know, how do I, just accept that someone may be thinking wrong about me and accept it as, you know, I try to do this like, as Krishna's will, and, you know, I try to not speak in clarification, but I just can't stop. I mean, that's my nature, I guess, where just I have to clarify, this is not what I mean. But I find that it's just going in wrong, you know, long, long discussions for no end, and it's going to come back to the same thing again after.
We have an ISKCON communications office, and the communications director was reading a book called "That's Not What I Meant." And I was curious why what's in this book, and he said it's written by a lady that became a PhD because in her marriage relationship, her husband would sometimes say, "What would you like?" And her statement to him was, "Whatever you want, honey." And he said to her, "No, I want to know what you want." And, you know, her marriage broke up. You're a little fidgety. Leave that microphone alone, okay? For at least 30 seconds. So then she went and got a PhD and, you know, learned about communication. And in one of the, because I read just one little chapter, she was visiting in England. She sat in a cafe. She went to a cafe. All the seats were occupied. There was a little, like a you know, cabin or something. So she sat across from a young couple. And she didn't want to be the ugly American and, you know, get right into their face and blah, blah. So she was just letting them carry on. And after some time, they burst out, "You're so rude. You don't even say hello." And you know, her intention was just the opposite. That's not what I meant. So it happens that we're, you know, our intentions aren't communicated very well. But it happens the other way, too. Others' intentions are not received by us. We have our expectations, and it's not what it doesn't match our expectations. That's just part of human nature and understanding one another. And you felt for yourself better to be than to say. If you want people to understand that you have good intentions rather than bad ones, then be that which you want to say. You can communicate better ultimately by achar than prachar. By character more than just the words that you say. Let's, you know, say, if someone is very consistently of reliable character and good demeanor and careful in how they conduct themselves, if they say something that seems like weird or like rough or something, you don't take very seriously. But if someone has bad character and they say practically anything, it's taken, you know, in a not a nice way. So be that which you want to say. And then when it comes to clarification, it gets a little easier because there's trust in the relationship, because it's the trust is resting on good character. And it goes back to, you know, what's that one quality that when resentment can disappear? It's Krishna Eka Sharana. That's the solution.
Yeah, I think I need to.
You work
still
on
practice
it.
More.
Yeah, you practice. And then when your husband asks you, you know, what do you want?
I want him to become a
devotee. You can ask him. Do you want to know really what I want, or do you want me to just, you know, be happy with what you want? Yeah. And he'll say, "No, I want to know what you want." and you go forward. That, you know, that's, you ask for seek clarification from the other person. Okay. Anything else in the room? Yeah?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Mask down and we can hear you.
Sorry.
Better.
I know you just...
But you got to put your mask back up again.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I just have one question. So the suggestion you just did to her was as a devotee, what would be your suggestion in the same case for non-devotees?
Which give, spell it out a little bit more. So in dealing with non-devotees, how should we?
As a non-devotee, how should I deal with the devotee?
You're pointing to yourself as a non-devotee.
I mean, I'm not as high as you guys are here, but I'm not sure if I'm going.
But you're a devotee. You're a devotee. You may not be. You know, if you put, we hook you up to a devotee meter, you may register as a 3 instead of a 9.
Okay.
But the 3 is a devotee. So don't, I mean, you're a devotee.
I hope she's listening to next to me. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Well, this is this point of acceptance. In any relationship, we especially those who, in their heart of hearts, they're devoted to Krishna, we honor that. And we don't like judge, "Hey, you're only a 3, you're not a 7. But we honor the 3 and we encourage the 3 to become 3+0.1.
Thank you.
That's what friendship means. There's a really nice little saying, a friend recognizes another person, and this is a whole nice thing. Do you have that, Vangshi Dari, do you have that? Forward it to them. You have to forward it to everybody. A friend is one who gently encourages people to grow. You accept the other person. You know where they've been. You know where they are. You know what their nature is. And you're accepting. And you gently encourage them to grow. Gently. Emphasis on gently. Encourage them to grow. So, it's perfectly okay. It's not a competition or a race who's going to cross the finish line first. You know, in relationships, we're here to assist one another. I'm not thinking, I'm up here and you guys are down. If that was the demeanor, it would be very unpleasant and uncomfortable for everybody, myself included. So that's not, anyway. And if somebody has that, then that's not a very advanced position. But, you know, we encourage each other. That's what we do in relationships. Gently encourage one another to grow. Especially, and if you can do that within the family, then you can do that outside the family. If you can't do that within the family, you're not going to do a good job of doing it outside the family. So, you know, communities, the core of it is in the family.
And I think association of devotees really greatly helps.
Yeah, sure. So association of devotees helps take everything up. We need Prabhupada. And then we need his Bhagavatam and the reading of his Bhagavatam with others and encouraging one another like that. Okay?
Thank you.
Anything from you two? No? Let's go online.
Sri Radhika Mataji sent three questions.
Okay.
The first one is, if there is one quality you can identify that catapulted. It's spelled out as C-A-T-A-P-U-L-T-E-D.
Catapulted.
Dhruva Maharaj, so quickly from Abbas to Shuddha Bhakti, which normally takes many of us many lifetimes, what would that be? Gratitude?
Well, that's what happened right at the very beginning, towards his mother and towards Narada. The first thing he did with Narada is he circumambulated Narada. Before he went off, he felt very grateful in his heart. Yes, gratitude. Yeah, gratitude. And he had enormous respect. Respect is another one towards Narada. And Narada just supported his respect for his mother. What she said is true. This is perfect for you. Next.
The second question is it correct to understand that Krishna protects a devotee corresponding to his degree of faith and surrender? So, for instance, for Mother Suniti's level of faith and surrender, it was a laudable act to send her 5-year-old son to the forest to facilitate his journey towards Krishna. Whereas someone with maturing faith would have different considerations in action, acting as Krishna's instrument.
Oh, yes, definitely.
The third question is, how to reconcile the statement that a pure devotee is dear to everyone with the fact that some persons were inimical even towards Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur or Srila Prabhupada?
What's the question?
How to reconcile the statement that a pure devotee is dear to everyone?
Oh. Well, dear to everyone on the soul level. Just as Krishna is dear to everyone, some people want to kill Krishna. You know, atheists.
This is from Ruchira Mataji. I'm trying to understand the purpose behind Dhruva's material desire being granted even after he was beyond all material desires.
Oh, that's easy. Lord Vishnu wanted a qualified ruler. And the qualified ruler can have opulence without being disturbed. So it was service for the citizens of the world to have a qualified ruler so the citizens could be ruled in the proper way. And the king needed some course correction. So the king had Dhruva association for some period of time, maybe, 20 years or whatever the period of time is until he became king. So he became now eligible to himself becoming qualified. But it wasn't punishment. It was give the citizens of the earth planet a qualified leader. It's Satya Yuga, so they need a qualified leader. And Dhruva's the one.
This question is from Amol Bakshi, Prabhu. Is Suruchi's behavior considered Vaishnava Aparad and hence deserving of harsh punishment, even though Dhruva Maharaj wasn't a pure devotee?
Okay. He was a devotee and he was a small boy. That question came up before. He was a devotee even before he went off to the forest.
And
mixed devotee, but devotee.
The second question is, intense material emotion such as anger or fear does enable us to temporarily override bodily demands. However, 5-year-old Dhruva Maharaj went from regular life to surviving without water within 3 months. Was it just determination or did Narada Muni empower him?
Both. I mean, by determination, you can't stop drinking water.
This question is from Neeraj Bhatnagar, Prabhu. In your previous lectures, I heard chanting without Krishna Katha is incomplete. Is the vice versa also true?
Well, if you engage in Krishna Katha, you're hearing Krishna's name because it's within the Katha. But they go together. So don't do one without the other. In practical terms, don't do one without the other.
This question is from Yashoda, 10-year-old daughter of Rajeshwari Prana Mataji from Bangalore. Why did Krishna not come to give benediction to Dhruva until the demigods prayed to Krishna about the disturbance?
Well, he was letting him become mature. One response to that question is, Narada, even without Dhruva's practice, could have given Dhruva what he wanted because he was so powerful. But that's not the business of Guru. The Guru's business is to give persons the means for purification. And similarly, Vishnu was giving him the means of purification through Dhruva, through Narada. And when it became matured, then he came. That's it.
This is Amara Mataji's question. Dhruva Maharaj had a need for love, and although he took shelter of anger meanwhile, but ultimately that need was fulfilled by Krishna. Is it the right understanding in the light of Srila Prabhupada's statement from Ishopanishad that all incompleteness is felt due to incomplete understanding of the complete whole?
Yes, but the premise of your question is a little self-styled, but the conclusion is correct.
And the second question is, what was most endearing to Lord Vishnu in Dhruva Maharaj?
What did Vishnu see in Dhruva that endeared him to Dhruva? That's the question. Well, it's similar to some of the earlier questions. It's Krishna Ekasharana. Dhruva actually took, he started with a motivated reason to take shelter, and he ended up with just full shelter. So that's the quality. Yeah, come forward.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. My question is about Dhruva Maharaj was touched with the conch of the Lord.
Uh-huh.
So, what is the difference between, super soul being within the heart? I mean, are we not recognizing it? I mean, that the touch of the soul in the form of the super soul, or what is the difference between externally Lord is touching the devotee or being in connection with the super soul? Are we not recognizing the presence of the super soul? That's why we don't feel that spiritual.
I'm not sure what your question is. Let me say back what I think you're asking in simpler language. Is there a difference between meditation and physical contact with the Supreme Lord? What's special about the physical contact with the Supreme Lord that makes it different than meditation upon the Supreme Lord?
No.
That's not your question.
I mean, super soul is within our heart. Are we in connect with the super soul? I mean,
he's already there. He's inside, an ant. He's inside this guy, this little plant. He's there. So consciousness of that presence is one thing, and visibly experiencing that presence is another. So I'm not sure what you're asking. Are you sure what you're asking?
Yeah, no, So because when Lord Vishnu came and touched the Dhruva, he felt, completely different.
Yes, he did.
So because super soul is within our heart, I'm thinking that we are in connect with the super soul. I mean, Lord is always...
But we're not conscious, like that this plant is not conscious.
Yeah, we are not recognizing that.
Yeah. Okay. One more, online. And that's it for tonight.
This question is from Sanchari. I'm thinking about Narada Muni's instructions for Dhruva to meditate on Vishnu. Was his moving Dhruva towards Lord Vishnu and not Krishna, because Krishna was not known to Dhruva back in Satyayuga? Also, is there a reason?
No. It has nothing to do with Yuga. It has to do with the disposition of Narada. Disposition of Dhruva. Dhruva's disposition was Vishnu Bhakta. And that's why. That has nothing to do with the age or anything. It's just that was his type of bhakti, Vishnu Bhakti.
And the question along with that is, is there a reason why Dhruva Tila is located in Vrindavan?
Yeah. Because that's where Narada sent him. He sent him to Madhuvan, and in Madhuvan, one part of that forest, Madhuvan, is a hill called now Dhruva Tila. It wasn't called Dhruva Tila before he went there. It wasn't like assigned to him. Before Narada told him to go there. It's now called Dhruva Tila. But it's a holy place. Narada could have sent him some other place. He sent him to that place. And there's not, to my understanding, there's not some esoteric reason why it had to be that place instead of some other sacred place.
So, you know how everyone attains different lokas after they leave their material body. So if one goes to Dhruva Loka, do they come back to the material world? I know it, I mean, the spiritual world, right? Would they come back to material world?
No.
From there?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
To enter, to enter the spiritual world, one has to come to the stage of love, prema. Now, Dhruva had attained that stage. It wasn't Krishna prema, it was Vishnu bhakti that was pure. It was pure bhakti. So to attain the spiritual world, that's the requirement.
Okay. What kind of devotee they can go to Dhruva Loka?
Do you want to go?
No.
Okay, then why are you asking?
I want to go and
okay.
Krishna.
Then you should be happy with that.
Krishna.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.